Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
Olivia Fahey, Mick O'Connell and Dee Reddy. Join us once again for Movies and Booze. Good afternoon to you all.
Good afternoon.
We've a lot to get through because we've got three wines to get through, Mick. So tell us briefly what those three wines are.
Well, our very, very, very generous sponsor, M&S, have given us three delicious
French
wines.
There's no need to suck up, you know. But,
play the game, Sean. You know how it is. I actually just strolled down past M&S on Grafton Street to check the pricing on them because I failed to do that earlier. And actually, they all happen to be on sale as well. So they're obviously having a French sale, but they have a Bourgogne Chardonnay, they have a Fleury, so that's one of the Beaujolais Crus, and we have a Côte d'Aron Village. And again, all on sale in M&S.
Okay, fantastic stuff. And now, it's Wicked. Are they saying Wicked Part 1? Or are you not allowed to say Part 1?
So they're saying Part 1 in very, very small writing. So that's kind of how they're getting around it. But yes, it is only the first half of the hit musical. So the ending is, for those who know the musical, the ending is the exact same as the end of Act 1 of the stage show. And it is actually, the length of it is 2 hours and 40 minutes. So it is the length of the entire musical, but only half of it. This had me very, very nervous. And yes, the look on your face right now that I know nobody else can see is exactly how my face was too. Yeah. So yeah, for me, I was very, very cautious going into this, but I have to say it is just spectacular. I was really, really surprised just how well they did with it. Not perfect. I know there's a lot of people throwing 5 stars around the place. I'm like, nah, it's never a 5-star film, but it is thoroughly enjoyable.
Yeah, and is it immediately apparent which bits they've dragged out?
Yes,
is there so a long car drive where nobody says anything?
Yeah, so essentially it's like there's a lot more pauses. There's a bit more musical interludes within the songs themselves. So it's like there's two scenes that they've definitely added into it. But overall, it's just like everything is just a little bit more elongated.
Are there more talky bits?
Not even.
Oh.
Like, there's a few extra lines thrown in here and there. One of them that actually had me on the floor with laughter, but I'll get to that later on.
Okay, all right.
But yeah, it's good.
Yeah, and Joy, is this based on, you know, real events, as they say?
It is, yes. Yeah. So this is about the story about how IVF essentially became a thing and the people behind the science of it and the little baby whose middle name was Joy, and that's where the name comes from.
Oh, right, okay. So is it like the first time they did it or?
It is how it actually came to be. So it's like all of the trials that they did, all of the backlash they received and how they made the first what they were calling test tube baby, even though it was a Petri dish and not a test tube.
Yeah. And Bill Nighy, is he like a scientist in this?
He's the obstetrician. Yeah. So he's kind of
See that.
Honestly, really? Couldn't either. But then when
because
you
kind of go, oh my God, he's drunk. His acting style is half cut.
But he has the energy of one of those doctors that, you know, puts you at ease with the kind of jokes and whatnot.
Yes.
And then you're like, but I will still get a second opinion. And then it turns out exactly what he said.
No, you go, how was the obstetrician? We went for drinks afterwards.
But no, he's much more serious than this. There aren't as many jokes, but he still has that presence of you just feel at ease with him. And he really sounds like he knows what he's talking about too. So
I suppose
really
that's acting. You need to make it sound like that.
Exactly.
If he was tripping over the words, that wouldn't be good. Right, so nobody wants to talk about The Apprentice. They're all terrified now.
This is really interesting, yeah. So Sebastian Stan, who plays Donald Trump in The Apprentice, which came out earlier this year, had been doing a kind of live interview, which was reported on across the board, because he had basically said he had been offered, Variety have this series called Actors on Actors, where they get actors to interview each other, and they're really, really good. There's been loads of people that have done it. Cillian Murphy's done it, John Hamm, Jennifer Aniston, Kristen Wiig, and they make for really interesting interviews. But what he said was that having been offered it by Variety, they couldn't actually find anyone willing to do it with him because everyone's, now he said it was no particular actor and nobody themselves is at fault. It was their sort of PR or management trying to get past that layer.
Yeah.
Everybody at that layer was too nervous of them going on and speaking about Donald Trump.
Yeah, because I think at the time the film came out, they were saying that there was a lot of resistance to, mm-hmm. to finding a streamer, and you know, it was a struggle with distributors.
Yeah.
I imagine since he's won, maybe that's even far more difficult.
I would imagine so, because actually since he's won, the planned cinema release that was going to be happening in the UAE has actually been cancelled.
Why?
Well, they're speculating it's for political reasons. That,
there are big MAGA
that
heads
the,
there.
That the UAE doesn't want to annoy the incoming president of the United States.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crikey.
And it's
because,
a shame. It's
I mean, he's
film.
Commented on it. He said it's a load of garbage. Obviously,
yeah, well, of course, he would say that. Yeah, Trump would say
but
that.
But it's really interesting. And I have to say, huge respect for Sebastian Stan for actually openly saying that, because this could potentially have a knock-on effect on
his
career.
Yeah.
Yeah, so more power to him, you know.
Crikey. It got released here, though, in cinemas,
didn't
it?
It did, yeah. And like Tailored Films were even saying that they were the last bit of funding to get this film made. So it wouldn't have been made if it wasn't for The Irish, which I kind of love.
I think, though, it was released before...
Don't worry, we'll pay for that. Yeah. That's for sure.
It was released before the election madness really started in earnest
as well.
It did
the festival circuit at first,
right.
And then it got a general release.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I wonder, was the timing of the release in the US kind of just coincidental? Because it was at the start of, that was just starting to ramp up when it came out. So you could accuse it of being part of the election
It's a great
campaign.
Movie, though. Definitely recommend people watch it.
And Stan is so brilliant in it as well. Like, he's just superb.
And it's nascent Trump as well. So you're not going to be like, oh God, I can't deal with watching this man more.
Yeah. All right. Okay. No, but actually, that's even more, because I suppose that the thesis in the film is like, this is how he got to be who he is.
Sure.
That somebody else told him to be like this. And your man, that, I can't remember his name now, the real life guy, was like, you know, Dr. Evil, really.
Roy Cohn.
Roy Cohn, yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's like, how far into your existential crisis you are on the day. Do you want to watch it or not?
Yeah.
let that be your guide.
Yeah. Right, so, and now, we will be talking about Wicked very shortly, but apparently people aren't allowed to sing along in the cinema. Had you noticed that
so
when you
funny.
Went to see it? That there were people hitting them with sticks and then they weren't
started
singing? I
could hear some people just very quietly singing along to themselves, and but I always remember seeing a couple of videos of people being like, oh, you're not going to be able to hear Cynthia and Ariana sing, you're going to hear the girl sitting like three seats away from you who was like trying to make it on Broadway but never got her chance.
Yeah.
And she just thinks that this is her shot. Right. And all my friends were saying that, sending it to me being like, that's you.
Yeah. Now, someone did say to me the other day that they didn't reckon that would happen in Irish cinemas. But having gone to see see Mamma Mia with my older sister, who's not particularly a fan of ABBA. Now, granted, that's my fault because I used to sing it a lot in the car as a child. But she ended up sitting beside this guy kind of at the end of our row who was singing along to everything. I thought she was going to lose her mind. So Irish cinemas are apparently not completely free of that type of behaviour. But it's so bad in the US that the cinemas and the filmmakers have actually released a statement imploring people not to sing along with Wicked and to let other audience members enjoy it as is, and like taking it so seriously that they've now started doing special screenings for people who do want to sing along, which makes a lot of sense to me.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
But you can still sit there and eat a massive bag of potato and nobody can hear a damn thing.
Well,
you just can't sing.
I mean, The whole popcorn in cinemas thing debate is one that I'm firmly pro popcorn, so I'm not going to get into that with you, Sean.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, but they can't. Are they like? Would they throw people out if they start singing? Or how severe are the penalties?
I mean, I guess it'd be the same as any other behavior that is perceived as antisocial in the cinema, like chatting on your phone or to each other. I'd imagine cinemas are doing it on a case by case basis, but it has been such a severe problem that they have needed to introduce extra rules, which I think is absolutely hilarious.
God, that's mad. Right, so tell us about our first wine, Mick.
So all three wines, we're kind of on the eastern part of France. If you were to draw in your head a line from Paris down to Marseille, we're kind of on that line.
Mm.
Okay, so the first one is a Bourgogne Chardonnay. Next one is Fleury, which is a little bit further south. And then further south again, you've got Côte d'Or and Village, but all on that line. First one, Bourgogne Chardonnay is what we have in our glass at the moment. And I have to say, this is absolutely delicious. Mm-hmm. So in Burgundy, so Bourgogne is just is the French word for Burgundy.
Could this also be called a white Burgundy?
This is a white Burgundy.
Yeah.
This is absolutely a white Burgundy.
Yeah.
And actually, it's quite interesting because it's a recent phenomenon that we've added grape varieties onto white Burgundy or to red Burgundy. Previously, it was just called Bourgogne AC, which means Burgundy Appellation Controle. So it's Appellation Controle is a geographic rule system.
Yeah.
But it was just a thing where you'd look at it and it would be Bourgogne AC and you see that it's a white wine, so therefore it's white Burgundy.
Okay.
But now, more recently, they've added in the grape variety, which is good. Also, you have another grape variety that's used in Burgundy called Allegotte. And Allegotte used to be the poor sibling, but has undergone a really big revival in Burgundy at the moment. A lot of the trendy Burgundy kids who are making wine are doing Allegotte, partly because it's cheaper to make, but they're making really interesting wines with it. This is Bourgogne Chardonnay or Bourgogne AC. So it's kind of, in Burgundy, you have a triangular pyramid of quality. At the top, you've got Grand Cru, then you've got Premier Cru, then you've got Village Level. So Village Level is Meursault, Pauligny Montrachet, Chasson Montrachet, they're all village names. And then Bourgogne AC, you can effectively take grapes from anywhere down as far as Mâcon, up as far as Chablis, and you could blend them together.
Okay, yeah.
That's in theory. In practice, most people that make Bourgogne AC make it in the south, so around the Mâcon, because it's cheaper. But also, in practice, a lot of people, if they own grapes in Meursault, they make their Bourgogne AC from grapes in Meursault. So usually it's a thing where if you see a producer that you like, you should buy their Bourgogne AC because it's brilliant value.
Yeah.
Like you do get, you know, us in the wine nerd trade, we often say like, oh, it's like a baby Meursault. But it kind of is. Usually it's from the younger vines from those villages. So you get really, really great value. This tastes to me like very, very cool climate style. So it tastes Chablis-esque. So I would say if people are into Chablis, this would be an absolute winner for them. But my guess is that the fruit is from Mâcon. There's a very, very, very small amount of oak here that you can just about taste, which gives just a little bit of richness. But this is like super fresh. It's a great aperitif wine. I'm really impressed with this. And it's on sale at the moment and is $14.50.
Yeah. Okay. So it's Chablis adjacent, we can say.
Chablis adjacent or Mâcon adjacent. If you like either of those wines, heartily recommend this.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So what movie would you like to do first?
Oh, let's go for Wicked.
Let's go for Wicked after this. You're gonna be popular. I'll teach you the proper poise when you talk to boys. The ways to learn from. I'll show you what shoes to wear, how to fix your hair. Everything that really counts to be popular. I'll help you be popular. You'll hang with the right cohort. You'll be good at sports. Know the slang you've got to know. So let's start, cause you've got an awfully long way to go. Don't be offended by my frank analysis. Think of it as personality dialysis. We weren't just listening to that clip, Olivia. Indeed, we're performing it here in the studio. That is Wicked Part 1.
Well, that was only part one of our performance.
Exactly. Yeah. Stay tuned for part 2. Okay.
I look forward to you performing to the IVF movie later on. Or Mother and Brother. Maybe Alarmed at what might that involve. Okay. So you said that, I mean, it's can you, how little can you give in terms of spoilers? Because so many people have seen the show, so they know what the story arc is. But
I have no idea.
Yeah, okay.
I'm the one.
So try not to ruin it for me.
There is actually quite a few people I've discovered who have never seen the musical, some of whom were at the premiere during the week, and they were like, we went in with absolutely no basis for what this was. And I was like, how has anybody not seen? I've seen it 6 times. Like, that's how many times I've seen it.
Wow.
I love this musical. So a story is essentially...
Where have you seen it, Sarah? You 6 times? What, like, yeah. Have you believed... Traveling the world.
So the first time I saw it was actually in Australia.
Okay.
I've seen it in London and I've seen it in Ireland 4 times.
Okay. Fair enough. Commitment. Wow. Okay.
I know someone who's seen it in like the 20s. Like even in the most recent block, he went to see it, I think, 12 times. And it was here for 3 or 4 weeks.
I've only seen it once now, but I will be watching it again in
because it's a different experience seeing it on stage and seeing it on screen.
It sure. is, yeah. And even like John M. Chu was even saying that there are certain things you can get away with on the stage that you can't get away yeah. with on film.
And vice versa.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why with this, there's a couple of the songs that do have some subtle changes. So the diehard fans will notice and kind of go, how dare you change my precious song? But it kind of makes sense in the context of the film why some of these changes have happened. So they're very, very small and actually adds to that kind of thing that I was saying earlier, that certain scenes and certain songs have just been a little bit elongated. So one of the songs in particular has a few flashback sequences kind of interlinked into the song as well, just to kind of give a bit more gravity to the song itself. So it does work. Again, not perfect. I didn't like the overuse of the CGI. That was the big thing that kind of bugged me at times, because sometimes the transitions from the lovely, beautiful sets and the realistic look to the film, the transition from that to the really heavy CGI stuff just didn't work well. It looked like a computer game at times. So for me, that's really where it kind of fell down. But overall, the genuine feeling that you have afterwards, you just want to get up and clap. Like, it is just very, very well done.
Okay, so apart from the crack cocaine addicted devotees of these films, let's just pretend, say, me and Mick haven't seen it before. Mm-hmm. Haven't a clue. Wouldn't have a notion of going, probably won't go now. What's it about?
Oh yeah, sorry, you did ask me that question already and I got completely sidetracked.
Yes.
This is kind of like a prequel / parallel story to The Wizard of Oz. So it is how the Wicked Witch of the West became the evil being that she is seen to be in The Wizard of Oz. It starts off with her in school and she actually meets Gertlinda, as she is known before she changes her name to Glinda, the Good Witch. And it's kind of just the interactions between the two of them, how their friendship evolved from enemies to best friends to kind of enemies once again. And in the first half of the film, not the first half of the film, the first part that we have out now, it's kind of, it ends, I don't want to say how it ends.
Yeah, you see, that's the dead end of this, yeah.
I just really knocked myself into a corner there.
Yeah. Everyone knows the story of The Wizard of Oz. So, and if this is a prequel, you can kind of make your own.
So actually, I will say this half is the kind of the prequel stuff. And then the second half is more the companion parallel story to The Wizard of Oz. That's kind of how they've blocked it.
Okay. Somebody wants to know, are there tornadoes in it?
No.
No.
No tornadoes. Slight little storm at one point, but that's about it.
Any asbestos?
We're into the innie jokes already.
No. In the original, the Judy Garland Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
Maybe that's why they're using CGI this time. There were insane things that went on in the production of it. So there's one scene where they're doing snow angels.
It's the poppies.
That's it. And it's actually, they're just frolicking around asbestos.
There are poppies, but there's no asbestos.
Okay. Good to know.
Okay. All right. And don't say where it ends, obviously, but like this segment of it, does that end on a satisfying note? Are you walking out saying, oh, I have to pay this amount of money again?
I also love how you just made a pun there and didn't even realise it.
I'm sure I didn't. Yeah.
So it actually does. So it's a bit like, I was actually chatting with Rory Cashin earlier on today, and he said it's like the Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring, where it kind of ends and you're happy enough, but you're really excited for the two towers to come out afterwards. That's exactly what this is like. You're happy enough, but you're very much anticipating the next bit. Like, I can't wait for part two to come out. But you're not like dissatisfied with what you've just seen. It's not like that usual part one where it's literally just a massive setup for part two. This in itself is still quite a complete story. And then the second part now is going to be telling a slightly different tale, and one that even people who will know like The Wizard of Oz even more so, it'll be a bit more similar in that sense.
And have they done the production of the two parts all together?
Yeah, as far as I know, it was filmed back to back. So the part two is actually coming out 21st of November next year.
Ah, okay,
so
cool.
It really isn't that long to wait. We only exactly a year apart. So,
yeah. Will it have a kind of a Lord of the Rings type reaction in that sense of people will be parsing every single detail of it?
Pretty much. Like, they've been doing that with the first part. And like, there's even quite a few Easter eggs that have been put in there for the diehard fans. Some of them that you have to kind of put your opera glasses on to be able to spot. Others are right there in front of your face and you're going, oh my God, look who it is. So no spoiler, I'm not telling you who.
but an ordinary punter who's just wandering in to see a film won't get, we'd see any of these Easter eggs,
no,
or
and
know
you
any
won't,
of the stuff is about.
You won't feel like you're missing out because it's done, the subtle ones are done subtly enough that you'll just be like, ah, oh, that's nice, and won't really know the context but still appreciate the visual. But you will definitely know when the reaction from the audience for some of the other bits. So you'd be like, well, that's a big deal.
Yeah, but then people will be like getting excited and you won't know why. You feel kind of left out.
See, I can't explain it anymore.
I know, I know. It's just a little community. It's special to us. You don't understand.
It's ours.
It's ours. Let's talk about our second wine today, Mick.
So we have a flurry. and flurry is the is certainly the most famous of all the Beaujolais crus in Ireland. This is the one that that people go pretty wild for. I guess because the name sounds vaguely like flowery and is memorable and
you
can say it. This is pretty good timing because yesterday was Beaujolais Nouveau Day, which is the third Thursday of every November. Beaujolais Nouveau is the very, very, very first wine to market after harvest that usually happens in September. So Beaujolais Nouveau was a huge deal in the 80s where people were getting on like helicopters to go pick up bottles, bring them back to other markets. It certainly died out a little bit over the last, I guess, 20, 30 years, but is coming back in a big way now. And you have a lot of the really trendy natural wine producers from Beaujolais who are now doing Nouveau as a fun gimmick again.
And
maybe less gimmicky and more get sloshed is the vibe now on Beaujolais Nouveau Day. This particular one, it's Beaujolais Cru. So what they mean by Cru is there's various villages in Beaujolais that are kind of designated as higher quality than the others. So you'll know Fleury, Morgan, but this is the one that is really famous. It's a light, dry red. It's very like the fruit profile is quite tart, raspberry, crunchy kind of style. And this is great value again. So another hearty recommend. Two out of two.
If I could be so bold, it has a kind of almost like a juice sort of flavor to it, but then it also has that nice little punch that you get from like a red wine.
Absolutely. Like the beauty of a variety of a style of wine like this. So it's from the Gamay variety. Gamay tends to make quite light reds. There's different layers of kind of quality in Beaujolais. Just plain old Beaujolais. We had a plain old Bourgogne last. Plain old Beaujolais, if it just says Beaujolais on the label, tends to be done in a style that's carbonic maceration, which is it's almost like drinking very light kind of Ribena type thing. Here it's made in a way where it's semi-carbonic. So you have some of that where it tastes like juice, but then the part that isn't carbonic is made like normal wine. So you have some of the dryness that comes in there as well. So it's kind of juicy and bright and light, but there's a little layer of seriousness as well.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I remember years ago, Martin Moran describing Fleury rather ungenerously as a starter wine. Which is a bit mean, I thought. Somebody wants to know, isn't Oz all happening inside Dorothy's head? Because she bumped her head during a tornado. Is it the same in Wicked? Or is it like this is a parallel universe where half the universe has been killed?
This is like Ozception.
But they do time travel and come back.
Essentially, this is as if Oz is a real place. So the book, it's not written by Frank L. Baum. Yes, Frank L. Baum. Jeez, brief moment of panic where my brain misfired and forgot the name. It's not written by him. It's written by another author. So it's kind of taking aspects of the Wizard of Oz story and creating something new from it. So in this universe, Oz is a totally real place and this is all actually happening.
Okay, so that answers your question there. Someone says Littlefield. Who's Littlefield? I assume he's the author of the Wizard of Oz or writer or director or something to do with it.
Is it Gregory? I'm going to Google the name of the author.
Anyway, your man says, whoever this is, says Littlefield claimed that the characters in The Wonderful Wizard of Oz represent figures from the Gilded Age. Munchkins were our ordinary people oppressed by the witches of the East, banks and monopolies. The scarecrow is the farmer and the tin man is the industrial worker who's been dehumanised by factory labour.
Yeah, and the yellow brick road is meant to represent the abolishment of the gold standard, and that's why the Emerald City represents the dollar and printed money.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. I did not know any of that.
A lot in there. Drew wants to know, you're all well trained and experienced in the wines, but what would be a good wine for someone, my wife, who hasn't had wine before but wants to get into it, however, really does not like oversweet flavours and any fermentation flavour? Is there such a wine?
Yeah, lots. I would say a good starter wine is the likes of an Albarino, which is kind of fruity but also crisp and dry. Like the vast majority of wine that you'll see in most wine shops is dry. It's designed to not really have any sugar at all. You'll see like major brands like the likes of Blossom Hill, etc., will have quite a chunk of sugar, and to the point where if someone doesn't like sweetness, that would be pretty off-putting. But I'd say dry, us wine nerds, we talk about dry versus sweet. It's one or the same. So dry means a lack of sugar. So if they look for a dry style, and I would say start with white and try something like an Albarino, because you'll get fruity and refreshing.
Yeah. Dermot wants to know, can you ask for the name of a decent Malbec?
Oh yeah, there's a great little one at the moment called from a family called Rutini, like an Italian family in Argentina. Rutini, funnily enough, I'm pretty sure means burps, which makes me laugh every time I see it. And they have a wine called The Trumpeter, and it is really fantastic. Malbec has gone through this thing where it used to be massive, big, rich style. Then it became quite light. And now that one is kind of a halfway house, I think, pretty good value. And if people like Bordeaux, they'll absolutely love that style as well.
Right. A temptation to talk about doing your routine every time you open.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable. Now, if anyone listening's ever been on a cruise, and you know, they're very steady ships, and you've always wondered why are there sick bags on them, well, this is why. They're a Hallmark cruise.
Yeah, so the Hallmark Christmas cruise for 2024 has already set sail. So basically what it is all of the people who insist on celebrating Christmas in November have bought tickets to go on a boat out in the ocean together. If ever there was going to be a sinking ship, it should be that one. But yeah, so there's been two cruises this year. So they had the first one, which ran from from November 6th to 10th from Miami to Mexico. And then there's another one from the 17th to the 21st. So it should be landing today. And basically it's just a Christmas boat. There are, you know, craft making things that you can do. There's Christmas food. There is unending Christmas music. Undoubtedly, I'm sure Santa makes an appearance. And then you have loads of actors who sort of do the rota in the Hallmark movie channels. And they produce an incredible amount of content for Christmas every year.
Yeah. So they all have to go on this cruise as well, or they're probably contractually obliged to
I would
that?
Imagine they are contractually. Well, where I suppose it depends. I wouldn't imagine that these are actors with the most clout in the world. So, yeah, let's just say that they are stuck going on the boat.
God, love them.
Yeah. Just I genuinely, I mean, I'm not big on the idea of cruises anyway, but this seems like a special type of hell.
I know, this is a special sort of hell.
Yeah.
I really feel sorry for the actors. No wonder people develop alcohol problems.
In November.
I remember working in a major retailer as a 15-year-old. And as a 15-year-old, I was only allowed to do 10 hours. But thank goodness I was only allowed to do 10 hours, because the music tape was, I'd say, about 65 minutes long. And at Christmas time,
the
same tape was played over and over and over, and that was like some sort of form of torture. It was
anyway, the tickets for next year are now on sale. So if that scathing review hasn't
do you know how much they are?
I have no idea.
Okay,
you couldn't pay me enough to go. So
okay, could you not?
No.
Say for instance,
okay,
you won the cash machine.
Oh, Lord.
Well, no.
They finally launched Rust.
Yeah, so this, for anyone who might have missed the news, this is the film that Alec Baldwin stars in, where there was somebody actually accidentally shot on the on the set. Now Baldwin was subsequently charged with manslaughter, and the case was dismissed on the grounds that the prosecution had failed to turn over evidence. But the armourer, so the person whose job it was to look after all the guns on set, her name is Hannah Gutierrez, a Reed, and she's currently serving an 18-month sentence. So the film is now, eventually, I think it's 3 years after that incident, it is only now seeing the light of day. And it got what is probably best described as a polite response at its world premiere, which was held in Poland. The director, Joel Souza, who was actually also injured in that incident, he was there. He did a Q&A afterwards, but a lot of people actually left the cinema before that Q&A happened.
Yeah.
And then Baldwin himself was not there. In fact, they said that he had not been invited to attend the festival, according to one of their event spokespeople.
Okay. I don't know why they went along with this at all.
I don't know why they felt the need to just push through and release it. I don't see it finding an audience, and by any measure, I don't think any film could be that important.
No, and people might only go for the most gruesome of reasons.
Right, yeah.
You know? Gosh. Right, let's move on to our second movie of the day. It is Joy. Here's a clip.
I've been asked to go on TV again to defend our work.
We haven't got the time.
They've asked James Watson on too.
Journalism won't give us an answer here. Science will.
We won't shift the Research Council without public support.
We won't get public support till we've some success to share.
I know that I made a mess of it before, but I...
Bill, you're a brilliant scientist.
But I'm not the most polished on TV, and I have a foolish tendency to not suffer fools, I know, but I will be better this time, I promise.
When we make these sort of decisions, we should have a veto system. I really don't think you should.
Gene, what do you think?
No.
There you go. That's Joy. So I suppose is it not so much to do with the science, but more to do with the reaction and people thinking this was weird, test tube babies and...
It actually had a lot more of the science than I expected it to. So it starts off with, basically there's three people, main people involved are a scientist, a nurse and a surgeon, shall we say. And they go into a lot of detail into the methodology of what they were actually doing in order to run this research. So a lot of the women that signed up for the very first round of trials, they knew that if they took part, it may not result in a baby for them, but it might result in a baby for people down the line.
Hmm.
So okay. The first group, you know, kudos to them for being kind of brave enough to do it. And like some, like you see in parts, like some of them even suffered like miscarriages during the trial. So it is kind of like laced in sadness, but the way that they kind of depict the story, it's like, you know, that like there has to be some suffering in order for the process to be complete and to figure out what is actually going to work out for people. And there's letters that are being sent in to the team to be like, please, 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 can I be a part of this? So while they are going through, like they're being, like their names are being slung in the mud by the media, the TV, the journalists in the paper, the lot. Like there's protesters outside. There's people writing graffiti on the walls of the hospital that they're working in. But at the end of the day, they know that as long as they have the support of the women who actually really need this for them, that's what's kind of like powering them through. So they have a bit of a really good balance, I found, between the sciencey side of things and the emotional impact as well.
Mm.
And the way that then they kind of blocked it is that like the scientist had the idea. He hires the nurse who kind of almost becomes like the mother figure to all the women who are taking part in the research. And then you also have the surgeon, the obstetrician, who's Bill Nye, and he's the one that's actually physically kind of doing the extractions and implantations and things like that. So
yeah.
I found it fascinating. I think it was beautifully written by Jack Thorne and his wife as well. The two of them actually decided to co-write it because they have gone through IVF themselves, and they just felt that it was a really important story to tell. And it was almost kind of like therapeutic for them as well to kind of go back and think back on like how they felt during these moments during their own treatment. So it was just kind of beautifully done.
Yeah, and this would have been set in 1960s, I take it?
Yeah, 60s, 70s. Yeah. So mostly in the 70s, because I think the first baby was born, I think it was like 78.
Oh, right. Was it that?
Like, yeah. Yeah. So they spent a solid 10 years working on this before they actually had a success. And they ended up in their trial, they ended up having a success of 2 babies. And I think it was like 218 women took part in the trials. Wow. So it was a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. And whilst outside people are protesting and there's also a sort of moral panic about it.
Yeah. And even with Jean, like her mother is very much like a God-loving woman, and she turns around to her and says, like, if this is what you're doing, like, that doctor performs abortions, like, how dare you? And she's like, but, like, abortion is legal now, Mum, like, and that's not all that he does. And she's like, I don't care, like, what you're doing is a sin, I want you out of this house. And she ends up not speaking to her mother for years.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Like, that was what was happening, is, like, not only was it the media, but it was also, like, families were being torn apart by the work that they were doing, but she powered through.
Yeah. And is this in cinemas?
It's actually going to be on Netflix.
Ah, right. Okay. Because so I was going to ask, why would you be stupid enough to release a film in a cinema when it's Wicked Week?
Yeah. 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 No, it's just after hitting Netflix. And while it's not like a Christmas film, there was just something like warm and fuzzy about the feeling that I had at the end that kind of reminded me of a Christmas film, and it is set in kind of winter in certain parts, so there is some snow and things like that, so maybe that's where my brain
family.
Was going exactly. Yeah. And it was like bringing people together for a very happy reason, so
yeah. Okay. Mick, tell us about our third wine today.
So final wine is also M&S Classics range. It's a Cote d'Aron Village. So we've kind of started up the north in, well, the middle of France in Burgundy. So again, that if you draw a straight line from Paris down to Marseille, you're kind of coming through all these regions. We did Burgundy, then we did Beaujolais, which is the south of the Burgundy region, but funnily enough, is politically part of the Rhône department. And then once you get down into the Rhône, as you come out of the northern Rhône into the southern Rhône, you kind of notice quite a change in France. It becomes Mediterranean as opposed to northern France. And we're in the kind of Mediterranean part here. This is the southern Rhône Valley. So if anybody has been to visit the town or small city of Orange, Orange, as we say in Dublin.
Yeah.
This is all the smaller villages around Orange. So you like the famous ones here are Chateauneuf of the Pape, Gigondas, Vacura. But there are a load of smaller villages that are still designated slightly higher in quality than just basic Cote d'Aron. So this is one step up. But you get cracking value for money from these places because it's Grenache, Syrah. They're kind of, we're into medium to full bodied wine here, where the Fleury was quite a light style of wine, slightly spicy, quite brambly in terms of fruit, like proper barbecue wine.
Yeah.
We're into southern France and kind of winter wine.
Mm. Yeah, it's lovely. Yeah. You normally don't drink red wine at all, Olivia?
No, I don't. I tend to be a white and the odd rosé drinker. And for me, like the second wine I quite enjoyed. This one is a little bit winky for me. Like I kind of had that little eye twitch going on. Because it just has quite a sharp kind of first mouthful to compared to the others. So
yeah.
The Fleury that we had in the middle, the Beaujolais, they work so well chilled down. So like you can drink them out of like, as in put them in the fridge overnight. And I think one of the listeners was asking about a kind of a gateway wine, if you will. If you wanted a gateway wine into red, chill down a Beaujolais and you have that thing of, I love white, like the refreshment that white brings.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
A cold Beaujolais gives you that thing as well.
Which is a thing we don't do enough. And we probably over-chill white wine to the extent where it's freezing, you can't taste it really. It's just cold stuff.
Great way to hide a bad wine though.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Heartily recommend getting crappy wine icy.
Yeah.
Whether it's red or white. Slushies. Yeah. Perfect.
Wine slushies. Now there's an idea.
There you go. Don't bother looking for fancy labels at all. Just stick it in the freezer for half an hour. Olivia Fahey, Mick O'Connell and Dee Reddy, thank you all very much.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.